All right, this is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Elections Commission. The date is September 3rd, 2013. It's 1 o'clock, 1:05 p.m. We're meeting in the Aspen Room at the Secretary of State's office, 1700 Broadway on the third floor. The first item on the agenda today is an invitation for public comment. Is there anybody here who'd like to offer any public comment? I don't see anybody, so moving to the next item in the agenda, it would be the SLI final report. So if SLI, if you could come up and just for the record, just tell us who you are and we'll move into discussing the report.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Santos with SLI Global Solutions.
And Tracy Mapps with SLI Global Solutions.
Okay. And SLI was the vendor chosen to write the report regarding the voting system needs in Colorado. And I've looked at the report, and I'd just like to compliment you. Really a lot of great information. I was a little worried just because of the time frame, and we hadn't seen any of the work yet. But it's very comprehensive, and really appreciate the effort you did to get this done in such a short amount of time. But I thought it was really impressive and gave us a lot of information to work with. So I didn't have any other specific comments, so I'll just kind of turn it over maybe to the commissioners who are present, and then we'll talk to the ones on the phone to see if we have other comments and questions. Go ahead, Elena.
Hi, this is Elena Nunez. I don't have comments, but Hillary Hall just sent an email that she couldn't be on the call as she had planned, but had one piece of feedback. And I don't know, we can forward it to you, but her comment was, overall, I think the report lays out the equipment issues we face. The one issue I have is at the beginning of the report. The assessment talks about the vulnerabilities of the voting systems. What it fails to do is put that information in context. It looked like most of the information came from the California investigation in 2006 or 2007. What isn't mentioned is the fact that none of these vulnerabilities have impacted any election in Colorado. In addition, a great deal of work was done to create rules and procedures to minimize any risks identified. And then she says we could either add a comment to that effect to the report or incorporate it into the commission's recommendations later. It seems to me like that would be a good point to add in just to provide a little bit more context. So even as we're highlighting the challenges, we're also acknowledging that the Secretary of State has worked with the counties and there are rules and procedures in place to mitigate that. How, I guess that's, it's a question for the commission as well as for SLI. Is that something we could add to the report, and what would that look like?
Yeah, I'm looking at section 216, summary of systems currently certified by the state of Colorado. I guess I'm looking at the first sentence of the first paragraph. While each system has to date satisfactorily conducted elections in the respective counties, as evidenced by the subsections above, each system has deficiencies that have been uncovered. So I think it talks to that a little bit, but if Hillary feels like it needs to be a little bit more clearly stated, we can do that.
And where are you in the report? You're under executive summary?
No, I'm sorry. Page 9, section 216.
Okay.
It's titled Summary of Systems Currently Certified by the State of Colorado.
Okay. And Elena, was her comment about the executive summary?
I don't know. Based on the email she sent to all of us, I assume so, because she said the beginning of the report.
Right.
Okay. So maybe it's just a question of rereading that and seeing if there's a way to bring in some of the commentary from 216 up into that.
We could easily put a couple of sentences in at the end of the third paragraph, where it starts, this is in the executive summary on page 4, there are 5 systems currently certified by the state and used by the 64 counties. We can add a sentence or two saying, while the report notes that deficiencies were found in other states' reviews of them, to date, no issues have been encountered within the state of Colorado, something like that.
That sounds fine to me. Anyone else have any comment on that? Otherwise, we'll direct that just be added. Okay, if you could just add that to the report. And we need to turn it in today, so.
That's what I was going to ask, was what the timeframe is for getting it back.
Yeah, so I hope we won't have a whole lot of changes, but if we can just make the changes that we have today, and if you can get that back to us by, what time are you leaving, Steve? Okay, so.
This is Richard. I would accept that change.
All right, so if we could get something by close of business so that we can send it over there.
Oh, yeah.
4:30 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay. All right, anybody else who's here who has a comment or question on the report? No? All right, how about on the phone? Do we have anybody that has any questions or further comments?
This is Fran. I don't. I'm glad that Hillary again addressed what I brought up last week about the report being from California, not really clearly denoting that we have not had any problems. I like the changes. Thank you.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Representative Rankin. I was trying to delay it by announcing you and.
Well, I'd like to discuss an issue that I didn't ask for in the report, and I apologize for it, and maybe I'm just asking your opinion. This is probably not very popular with the clerks either, but I was impressed when I read it with all the small counties, and we're, you know, spending money to buy equipment in a very small county with a few voters. Have we ever looked at consolidating the services, particularly the receipt of mail ballots and tabulation, across multiple counties, perhaps even at the state level? And I'm not suggesting a change in the report. I just want to take advantage of you while you're here to ask that question.
And the question is,
have we considered consolidating multiple counties into a single service center to avoid purchasing equipment, training people, security issues, all those things that, you know, 64 and many of those counties, I think 33 of them, classed as small.
I think it could make sense, you know, given a number of variables. I think if you look at, in terms of geography, what are the issues of getting the ballots to one central place? If that's not a big problem, you might look at, in terms of, you know, for the small counties, very small counties probably wouldn't need a high-speed central count scanner because they're built to do thousands and thousands of ballots, whereas a precinct-level optical scanner probably fits the bill. And the number of to date, from what we understand. I think in the right circumstances, it would make economic sense to be able to bundle one or, you know, two or more counties together that would be interested in doing that. Because again, yeah, as you said, from a security point of view, you have one point to protect as opposed to multiple. So yeah, I could definitely see that being a potential possibility.
And maybe, I guess, is Hillary online? Maybe a comment. I assume the clerks would resist giving up control of their own county tabulation and receipt of mail ballots.
I don't know if they would resist it just from a control standpoint. I think a lot of it has to do with the geography. And right now, they're not all on the same system. And many of the small ones use those precinct level, you know, where you actually essentially scan your own ballot at the precinct. And so I think, you know, it would just be a change in process for them. And when you're trying to tabulate those results at 7 o'clock on election night, you know, that 2 hours of travel makes a big difference. So I think that would be an issue. And then, you know, if you didn't actually, I mean, I just don't know how it would really save them a lot of time. I think a lot of the smaller counties, their concern is more just support, you know, for the use of the system. And we have in the past, and probably will continue to think about, one of the huge costs of the county has each year has been the printing, and the print costs vary quite a bit from county to county based on the amount that you request, the printer that you're using. And we've thought about, you know, in the uniform voting systems context, at least trying to go out as a state and get a print vendor contract, and then counties who wish to use that could use the print vendor selected by that committee. So that is one way we've thought about saving costs, but those are more the upfront printing costs, and they don't affect the back-end tabulation. I think it's another reason that you've seen us look more toward a software solution than the, you know, that we read about in the report, than the actual, you know, hardware that we see that's of such a great cost right now, and being able to use off-the-shelf scanners or off-the-shelf tablets or that kind of thing that have multi-use throughout the year. So, but we have not really worked on any kind of solution that would consolidate, except for consolidating printing and consolidating service costs, in trying to maybe select one vendor to do service, or as is pointed out in the report, having service much like the Kennesaw state model, where the state is sort of involved in that and providing that back to the counties who request it.
Yeah. This is Fran Long, and in response to the question, and Suzanne, I happen to agree with you wholeheartedly, your comments there, but Montrose County is a county that can facilitate their entire election, meaning we can create our own ballot, we can print our own ballot, and we are surrounded by several small counties. And we thought to go in together and perhaps do the front end, the printing, the service costs. We all are of the same vendor. So we did look at that. And in working with our vendor, they were considering that, but we would have to purchase a package for each county, meaning that not only would we have to pay our service costs for Montrose County, but we would have to pick up the costs for our surrounding counties, whoever we worked with. So it became very cost prohibitive at that point. But if we had some kind of uniform voting system that provided that, that would be very welcome.
But I'm also thinking of the back end. If we're if we're going to have mail-in ballots over 80%, I mean, who cares where they get mailed to as long as they're processed in a, you know, accurate and secure manner. So it seems to me there's some options this commission ought to consider.
That's definitely something to look at.
Anyone else on the phone have any comments?
This is Cindy Inkry. I guess my biggest concern is security. You know, if we can show that the systems these counties are using individually are secure, then we don't have to spend the money to expand the equipment. But I am concerned about sustainability and security, and those issues were raised in this report. And I think a unified voting system would solve some of that if we went with the right vendors.
Anyone else? There was the issue that I had raised a few weeks ago on the funding, and I don't think we ever really resolved that as far as what you heard from the counties in terms of making a recommendation that the state participate in funding of uniform voting systems. I know it talks about it generically, and you don't make a recommendation in the report, and I understand it would really be the commission's job to make that recommendation. But I don't know if any of the other, and Fran, maybe this is a question for you. I don't know where the Clerks Association stands on requesting that kind of funding for uniform voting systems from the state or for voting replacement costs, or maybe it's just too early to make that kind of a recommendation. I thought the report would provide a good platform for that, but it may be that we didn't get that far.
In the report, I see that it is very adequately stated that some of the larger counties, they're able to fund a system. As I represent the medium and small-sized counties, I know that we need some kind of funding. As the economy depresses, we have less and less funds to work with, and even going out and asking for a loan, no matter how long that goes, is still the matter of a repayment. That's still a difficult concept for some of the smaller counties that don't have any income coming in at all. So as a platform, we really need some kind of grant system, maybe, you know, something like that, the state funded. That's what I'm looking at.
This is Cindy Agri again. I still haven't seen a detail on cost estimates. You know, we talk about equipment without attaching any cost to it, and it'd be nice to know exactly what we're looking at and how that would break out county by county, or at least a rough idea.
Maybe you could respond to the cost estimate question. I think some of it might have to do with what kind of vendor was chosen. We could probably come up with costs for replacement of current equipment, but I don't know that we would know the costs of some type of uniform system.
Right. You know, we did have a survey that we sent out to multiple voting manufacturers. We had one response, and that manufacturer was more on the low end, and in a competition, they would probably be kind of a dark horse for winning a statewide type contract. All the other manufacturers declined to respond, and we did get a couple of informal responses saying that the reason was that with Colorado putting out an RFP to those same manufacturers for pricing, they were concerned about confidentiality, you know, in the competition, and none of them were really inclined to respond. You know, looking at some of the surveys that the state did recently, I think it was in March and May of 2013, there were some price estimates put out by some of the counties that kind of created a range for pricing, but in a statewide system or in the new systems that the manufacturers are coming out with right now, we weren't sure that that pricing would be reflective in any of the new systems, so we're very hesitant to throw a number out there, and that's kind of why we took more the route of estimating the pieces of hardware that would be needed for the state overall, given the current usage projections that the counties gave us in the county surveys that we did. So I think once the state gets the pricing estimates from the manufacturers in the Colorado RFP to them, it should be pretty simple to take those numbers, compare, you know, put them against the number of machines that we've estimated would be needed, and then come up with a final price, you know, plus figuring in their service and maintenance if you see that as part of the equation.
So maybe the answer is to just leave that issue alone in this report and then put it on our update list, or that we come back to, you know, weekly or monthly. And once we get the cost estimates down a little bit more firmly, then the commission can add it as an addendum or make a separate recommendation of some sort. But since we don't have enough information really to do anything with right now, I mean, it sounds like we're pretty far down the road, but it's not something that you could get a hold of.
Right, and the pricing that we were seeing, I mean, we could be off by several multiples, you know, and I wouldn't want to do that and, you know, be way off one way or the other. You know, we've seen really low price estimates from the one vendor who responded, and we've seen, you know, which was maybe a third or, you know, a fourth of what you could project potentially from other vendors. So,
okay. Well, I guess my conclusion or my request would be we just add it to the list then of things we come back to, Representative Rankin's list, and then we can take that issue up at a later time and not include it in the report. Does that sound acceptable to everybody? All right. Anyone else have any comments or questions? No? Go ahead.
This is Elena again. Just to clarify, I think you said last week that the county surveys were going to be an addendum to the report. Is that right? Because I think it would be helpful to include them for the legislature, so if anyone wants to dig in a little bit into the diversity of viewpoints from the counties, they have them. Can we include them as part of the report at the end or something like that?
Yeah, they're actually two attachments, and Steve has them, and
okay,
they're actually
great.
On the printouts as well.
Great. I don't know if I've got them in my in the printout, but I saw that they were sent around with the draft. So
okay.
Just checking that that was part of the okay. package.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Anyone have anything else? Or I think we can go ahead and approve it by consensus then. And if you can just add that that one simple statement in. And again, just thank you so much for all the work you did. I'm sure it was some nights and weekends, so I really appreciate, you know, the amount of effort you put in to give us something really comprehensive. So,
well, thank you for the opportunity, too. I mean, this was a good opportunity for us, and we've learned a lot about the counties throughout Colorado as well, which I think will help us and, you know, some future projects that we've already talked to some folks with here. So thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Great. Then we'll just look for your change, and then we'll forward it over to the legislature. All right, I think the only other item we have is on our agenda is issue tracking. Do we have that list, Steve?
It's on the back of the pack.
Okay. You all have it? Of the issue tracking?
Right after the report, I think, is the Representative Rankin's tracking sheet. And then
looked like a spreadsheet, but it's printed out.
And then it's followed by a couple of others.
We probably ought to spend a few minutes on this since we have a few, if that's all right.
Sure. Oh, I think, okay. Okay. Pardon? Okay. All right. So Representative Rankin had put together a tracking form for us so that we don't forget issues like the uniform voting and some of the other questions that we had. And the first item is the score modifications and the 61 items.
I believe, Les, you said that you had somebody in the Secretary's office who could help with formatting and tracking this. So,
yeah.
Okay, that would be my first question. Help.
we'll get it done.
All right. Well, just taking the score mods, I mean, these come right out of the Kraft report, and there's an attached sheet, several sheets that really do look like an Excel sheet. And what we should schedule meetings to have somebody from the software implementation team come in and just give us a status and check these things off. And probably ought to do that right away for the 2013 items, just to make sure they're really on track and being done. And then after the 13 election, I think we'll do the same thing with the software team, just periodically have them come in and spend a few minutes telling us where they are on these items. That was pretty straightforward. On the rules update, I shudder to ask for an update on the recall rules, but maybe we'll read the newspapers on that one.
Go ahead. What?
I was going to, this is Martha Tierney, I was going to follow up that with a comment about some of the comments we've been getting, just to make it clear that this commission doesn't write rules. So we've been getting some public comments coming in about the bad rules we're writing or the flaws they're seeing or rules we should be writing or... And I think it's important to make clear that we don't have rulemaking authority, and we can make recommendations, and we can look at where we think that there should be rules to implement 1303. But I just want to make that clear for the record.
Okay, thanks. So on the recall rules, we were in court again last week, and after that, we repealed. I think there were three categories. We repealed, first of all, an order that wasn't a rule, but an order regarding the use of what I'll call the yellow cards, but essentially these were voter information cards generated out of SCORE sent to the voters that were advertised as express cards to for voters to use as identification. We had issued an order indicating that we didn't believe that was proper identification. The judge disagreed, and that order was afterwards repealed. There was also an order regarding the absentee ballots. We had initially passed a rule that absentees were only going to be for excuse absentees. In other words, health reasons are outside the county, and the court disagreed with that. And so we repealed that. Along with that rule was a repeal of the eight-day period we had given to get those in afterwards. And one of the main issues with that was that our rule required that the ballots be mailed back so that they would be emailed there but mailed back. And so once it was extended beyond people outside the county, there was an issue with getting a postmark and that type of thing. And so that entire rule was repealed, and now the counties are doing absentee for any no-excuse absentee. But they will be mailing those ballots out, and the ballots will have to be back in the hands of the clerks, county clerks and recorders, by 7 p.m. on election day. And the only exception for that will be the UACAVA, Uniform and Overseas Voters, who continue under the statute to have 8 days and can return and receive by email. I think there was another one. What was the other one?
Residency.
Oh, residency. So the rule that we had passed regarding having to establish a residence prior to voting, the court disagreed with that also, and so it remains just the intent to remain. So so that's where we stand on the rules. That got repealed, and we are filing an appeal this afternoon with the Supreme Court. However, we're not asking for a stay. We did go ahead and repeal the rules, and we did not seek a stay on it because we didn't want to interfere with the election date as it's set, and we didn't want the court to have to set it back. But we are appealing based on repetition, likelihood to repeat. So there's two bases on which you can, when you go to the Supreme Court, you either have to have an issue at hand, essentially, which since we repealed the rules, we don't really have an issue in front of them anymore. But you can make an argument that it's not moot because it has a likelihood of repetition. And so particularly with those three that I've the one about the email doesn't matter that much because we're not going to be doing absentee balloting in the November election, but the other two, the residency and the ID requirement, will continue to be an issue that is likely to repeat in the November election.
The two being the ID and what's the other one?
Residency.
Oh, the residency.
Right. So that's where we stand on recalls, and I understand that Pueblo has opened on Friday. They had voting on Friday and again yesterday. And Colorado Springs, I think, is issuing ballots over the counter for people who are planning on leaving or who want to vote early, but that their VSPCs won't be opening until Thursday. And that's also when Pueblo will be opening 10 of their VSPCs. So that's what I know.
What should this commission be doing going forward? I mean, what is it that we're tracking as open issues? I mean, what kinds of actions are we really expected to take? I mean, I'm getting the same sort of feedback that Martha mentioned about we're writing bad rules. I mean, what, maybe we should try to clarify our role a little bit further here.
Mrs. Elena, I think it would make sense to have a response that we could send to folks, particularly on issues that really aren't related to 1303, and I think some of the feedback we've gotten really wasn't. It was separate issues related to electronic voting or email voting or things like that, where it really is separate from our purview. For the issues that are, I think, directly related to 1303, I think we should keep them on the list and figure out if there is a role for this commission. I don't know that we have consensus on those policy issues, and I think a lot of them are more appropriately left to the legislature. But to the extent that they impact rules or policies or, you know, the business practice model that counties adopt, I think it's appropriate for us to study them and make recommendations. So I would say, depending on the issue, we should maybe treat it differently. But I would like to have some stock response, and I'm happy to draft a couple of examples that maybe we can just send on behalf of the commission when we get those comments, so they just don't go into the ether and have people feel like we're just ignoring them and aren't interested.
So that makes sense to me. I mean, what we should do in this whole issue tracking exercise is to drill down to one more level of detail in those where we don't have it. For example, we do in the SCORE software mods, we don't in the rules. And a way to do that is to isolate those things that we come across that are 1303 related. For example, if we think the voter ID or the residencies are 1303 related, then that would be something we would list at the next level on our tracking sheet and, you know, talk about it, try to close off on it. Is that consistent with what you're saying, Lena?
Okay, yeah, that's
so
what I meant.
So we should start that list, and you just volunteered to do that, right?
Yep. I'll okay.
In security, well, business processes, we should do the same thing. I think we have, but we haven't really put it on a spreadsheet except for the 10 that are specifically related to SCORE modifications that track back to the software mods. So we should have an exercise to make the next level of detail in business processes, and I think Hillary volunteered to do that, didn't she? As I recall. In security, I think the same thing, and I'd like for the commission, if everybody has a consensus, to ask Trevor to help us make a checklist, you know, on security. What are the things we need to close off on going forward for? And if everybody agrees with that, I'll sit down with Trevor independently. We'll come up with a next level checklist for security and stick that and put that in the tracking system. Data interfaces, where are we? I don't know.
I'm just looking at Trevor. That's why there's a pause.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Rankin. As I mentioned at the commission's last meeting, we have engaged with CGIS to receive probably more timely and perhaps more comprehensive information on felon records, and also receive those with an increased frequency as we move towards key election activities, and we're engaged in the same discussions with public health and environment with regards to death records. And then I think most of the commission is probably aware that our office was one of the early states that is engaged with the Election Resources Information Center that's actually incorporating the national death list from the Social Security Administration into the checks that are being performed through that channel. And so that actually also stands to improve the eligibility, the view on eligibility of voters who are registered within the state of Colorado. So we're continuing to move forward in those three areas. Be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I do have one. Are we getting signature data, actually signature copies, as part of these interfaces?
We do receive signature copies. It's an electronic copy of a digitized signature when folks actually sign up for a driver's license, or if they appear with a driver's license renewal, if they appear in person and actually sign a signature pad or a piece of paper, our office does receive copies of those for every driver's license applicant.
How good is our signature database?
Well, they do update it. Like the signatures that are in there now, I believe, are mostly from the voted ballots from the last election. So we update. It's the most recent signature that we were able to capture.
Like what percentage of voters do we have signatures for, do we think?
Well, I think they're all, if they're mail-in, they're all required to have a signature.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the percentage is.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's over 90%. I think it's much higher than that, frankly.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Representative Rankin, that's something the clerks could also speak to as they're going through the business practice, because my understanding from some of the tours we've done of how they process mail ballots, they keep a library, so if someone's signature evolves over time, they can look and see if an old signature looks more right, or if someone maybe had broken their arm. Like, they have a pretty robust library, potentially, for a voter who's been voting for a long time. So
great.
It might be good to have them talk about that, too.
Yeah, let's do. I think we're going to need to come back to the whole idea of signature verification, because, as I understand it, counties are not consistent in how they do it, you know, how they go about it. So that's an area that we ought to put on our agenda at some point. I don't know if that fits under data interfaces, but it's an issue we should track, in my opinion. The change of address implementation comment, anybody know where we are? How'd we do in August on that? Hello, Trevor.
Sure, thank you again. So we did, I believe there was a call that elections held last week with, I believe they broke it into three separate county groups, small, medium, and large-sized counties, to discuss how to consume and how to use that NCOA information that we've provided to counties. I believe that the advice that we gave to them is, since we are so close to the coordinated election, that we advise them to not take automatic action based on those NCOA results, but to actually review those on a case-by-case basis. I think that a standard county process this time of year, this close to a coordinated or a general or a primary election anyway. But I don't believe that we're expecting counties to take significant action outside of, you know, on a case-by-case basis until after the coordinated election.
And just a follow-up, it would be helpful, I think, for our tracking, since there are the three groups, small, medium, and large counties, to have either a representative from each of those groups or a county representative just give us updates regularly on their experience doing the NCOA updates. It seems like it may vary from, you know, different size counties or whatever. So learning about their experiences as well as the Secretary of State's experience in terms of managing the list would be helpful for the commission.
Okay. And backing up to data interfaces for a minute, I don't remember if I updated the commission on the death records. We had that discussion about how often we were going to start getting them. And I think that you all asked for a follow-up on how often they're updated, and they are updated pretty sporadically. So when they have data to enter, they enter it, but they could go 3 days without receiving anything from the counties, and then the next day they might receive records from five or six counties. And so there wasn't a definitive timeline that it would necessarily help to get it any more often. And so what we settled on was 6 weeks prior, we would get it weekly. So I'll include that in the update. And we did send over a contract revision, I think last week, with the extra agreeing to the additional payments to receive that information a little bit more frequently leading up to the election. So just to let you know where we are on that.
How about out of state death records? Is there any hope of finding a solution to? We hear about that from constituents occasionally. So.
Sure. And again, that's actually a reason why the integration with ERIC pays dividends in that, because they're looking at the National Death Master Index. And so it's not just deaths that are reported within Colorado, but it's deaths that are reported across the United States, and actually linking that back to folks that are registered here in the state of Colorado.
Have we started using that data yet?
Yes, we have. Uh-huh. Yes.
And we have any numbers? Do we know how?
Not off the top of my head, but I can reach out to the folks in elections and try to gather some information
that,
for you.
But that would only be people who pass away in the last few months. I mean, if people have died years ago and they're still on our records, they might be there.
So if I may, so the files that we receive from the state registrar actually go back as far as 2 years. So we would see that information. They continue to retain those records on their list over 2 years. I think the Social Security Administration's National Death Master Index isn't limited to just those 2 years. So I think we would actually see that.
So we do use that data to...
Yes, we do.
I think it's just a little bit slower in getting it. I don't know how often we do those updates. I don't think it's monthly like we do inside Colorado.
I think that's true. I think the ERIC matches against the Social Security Administration Death Master. I think that's every 2 months that they actually refresh that information.
And could we actually add ERIC as a subcategory, I guess, under the data interfaces? I think it would be helpful to get an update, you know, now that it's been up for, what, a year, year and a half, which states are coming online, how that's working. I think it would just be interesting and helpful to learn more about that.
I would be happy to pass that along to Director Choate of Elections so he can provide that update.
Thank you. I think the next one was training. I don't know if we have anything.
Again, that's private county input, isn't
right.
it? We need to have a further breakdown of what it is we want to know about. Which,
okay. Connectivity and bandwidth. What did we say about that?
Well, Trevor gave us that fantastic explanation of highways and on ramps. We didn't hear about off ramps.
The question is there something we want to test or status between now and 2013, 2014? You know, it's really a question of how do we, you know, going forward, how do we actually do some verification that it exists? And so we need to be a little creative about, as in several of these things, the next level breakdown is devil's in the details. So we need to work on that. And I'll do that. I'll work on some.
And I think for that one, it'd be helpful to break out what needs to happen at the counties and the voter service and polling center levels versus what needs to happen at the Secretary of State and keep on track both of those pieces since they're related, but they are separate and there's different responsibilities and oversight and all of that.
We talked about recall. That really comes under rules, some of the rules issues, but I don't know. What else are we learning? Are we learning anything from the recall elections that we need to take forward?
We haven't had any.
Don't have recalls.
Well, we've learned the timelines don't work. And that's more of a legislation issue, I think. so that's certainly one thing that we learned. I don't think we have any real data back yet on anything. I mean, we will. But I don't think we have anything back yet, and we haven't had any connectivity problems or any issues with SCORE, so we haven't had any hiccups.
So we just leave that open, see what happens.
Yeah. The mock election, is that closed now, Trevor? It is?
But we were promised a report, weren't we, on
what
happened, what we found out?
We will. We just aren't going to be able to do it until after the recall. We just don't have staff around right now to do that.
Open issue. UVS, we need to incorporate the open issues from the UVS, which we started to do today. And the public comments, I pretty much took everything we've heard, although there's some that still need to be added. Only concern I have there is some of Mr. Branscombe's questions, which are incorporated in here, were part of the UVS study, so I'm not sure they're appropriate for checklist items. So with his permission, we might eliminate those questions and the things that were the very detailed UVS questions from the list. And I'll check back with him and see if he go for that.
One item under public comment that I wanted to address with the commissioners, maybe we could solve it today, is, I've heard from people outside of the immediate area that it would be a lot more convenient if they could call in their public comment. So I think especially for a lot of people who don't think we actually read their emails, they know that if they call in, then we have to hear their comments. And so I've heard from some individuals that, that kind of format would be a lot more friendlier for comment just because it's difficult to drive here even from maybe Arapahoe County to get your 3 minutes. So I don't know if anybody else wants to.
This is Martha Tierney. I think that would be fine. I think that we should make it easy for people to comment so long as we, you know, don't get taken over by comments. So we still have the rules of 3 minutes, and but I would be in favor of allowing that.
All right. Anyone else?
Agreed. I think that makes sense.
Anyone on the phone have an objection? It would be ironic if you did.
this is Jesse. I think it's fine, too. Thanks. Okay. Hey, and while there's a break in it, I'm going to have to jump off here in about 5 minutes. So thank you all for everything you put together for today.
All right. Thanks. So, Steve, maybe you could just add to our website that if somebody wants to publicly comment, that you would send them the conference call information, because I don't want to open the conference call up to everyone because I think there's a limited number, and then we also just have feedback problems and that sort of thing. So would that be a workable way to do it, to just say they need to contact you first if they want to do public comment by phone, and then you'll provide them that info?
So that's how we do email now. I do have some minor logistical concerns with giving out the conference call dial-in information, and it would be specifically quite awkward if someone who is a member of the public who wishes to comment sits through the entire hearing and starts talking at inappropriate moments.
Right.
Because if we need to dump one caller, the only way we have to do that is to dump all the lines.
Well, maybe we could have a second call-in number and just put them on speaker, like on that phone, and just put it up to a microphone or something. And then that way there's a separate call-in number for speakers.
I will investigate the options on that. But I, as of right now, I can't guarantee that we can make that the dial-in public comment work.
Okay. So we'll at least look at it and see if we can.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So November 2013 issues.
Yeah, that was meant to be things that we find out in November that we need to address. So it would be open until then. In the 2014 legislation, I mean, you know, there's obviously going to be some legislation in 2014. I mean, my suggestion as a commission, we try to come up with legislation which we have found is necessary, because we can't fix something with a rule or something was just omitted. And hopefully this would be a bipartisan bill that, you know, we could use to just clarify open issues that we've come across, and leave those things that might be politically controversial to separate bills. That's really what I'm thinking here. So we might as well start that list, since some of us will be involved probably in helping carry it. So.
No, I don't think anyone on the commission that's on right now was at the meeting we had with special districts, but we met with them, and they have an entire rewrite exempting special districts from 1303. And one of my concerns with it was that they essentially took the 120 pages of the bill and did crossouts here and adds there, and it was going to get very confusing for us to then tag on our amendments, because I didn't know, like, would we do that assuming their bill was going to pass, or would we, you know, I mean, how do you rewrite that? What we had asked them to do was go back and just exempt themselves and put their election rules in the Section 8, which got almost repealed. There's still some of it left, but most of it was repealed in 1303. And I know that they would be repeating a lot, but I still think it would be cleaner than going back through the bill and crossing out here and there. And some of it, they didn't understand the terminology they were changing had an actual effect. Like, for instance, they changed major election to something else. And of course that, you know, would affect everybody, because a major election is more than every 2 years, and that kind of thing. So I don't know where they'll end up on that discussion, but it sounded like they already had some sponsors. So I think it's going to be really, there's going to be a lot of players going forward, and we need to figure out how to get them all in a room or you know, the commission needs to put out some kind of recommendation about it, because, you know, I agree we should have just a cleanup bill that is truly a cleanup bill. Now, what happens with the special districts? I guess we could say that's cleanup. Some people might say it's political, because that's really a decision about whether they're going to be exempted from all mail or not, which I think some people would consider a political decision and not just a cleanup decision. So I would like to, you know, and we told them from the Secretary of State's office that our position was we very much wanted them to put it in a separate section. Whether or not that'll happen, I don't know, but it'll certainly complicate matters if we're going back on top of a cleanup bill that they've already attempted to clean up. So to the extent we can get them in front of the commission to discuss those issues with them, it may be that we should just have a round table with them at some point, and we might not be able to stream it just because there were so many people involved, but at least we could have an open meeting where there's a discussion of all those interested parties. And the municipalities were also there. Their issues aren't as great, but for the ones that are statutory towns, you know, and the whole issue of coordinating an election was a big issue for them, and the residency dates, because we have now have a 22 and they have a 30, and so when they coordinate their elections, what does that mean? Does that mean the clerks have to have separate ballots and that kind of thing? So the municipalities were trying to kind of tag on to that special district bill, but I just don't know that it was truly a cleanup in the way that we intended it. So
do we see that as part of our responsibility, since it really is 1303 related? I mean, at least until they exempt themselves from 1303, it's an issue that we are responsible to talk about. Is that true? How do you see it?
I think it's something we should keep on our list, and I think making sure that whatever they come up with doesn't impact 1303 and that the core of the model stays whole, I mean, I think would be appropriate. And clean up versus a policy conversation about, you know, what the appropriate approach is or whatever.
But I think that, you know, working on, you know, as you said, a bipartisan bill, I think it's important to realize there are other people out there doing things that we may or may not really be aware of in terms of, you know, what they consider cleanup and what maybe the legislature considers cleanup. So,
well, I think that should be our goal, is to work toward a, you know, a bipartisan cleanup bill. And then, but you're also saying at the same time, we better be on top of the municipalities and special districts, because that's directly related to 1303, but it might not fit within our cleanup bill. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it could fit within our cleanup bill to the extent that they agree to go into Section 8. I think if, you know, into their own section. But I think working off of somebody else's cleanup, which isn't really cleanup,
not, yeah,
is not getting us to where we need to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I told them at the time, you know, we'd be happy to draft that over here, which would just be a simple section saying, you know, special districts and municipalities are exempted to the extent that they wish to opt out and go use Section 8. If they want to stay in and they want to coordinate and they want to do this, you know, that's fine, but giving them some options. And then that way it's an easy thing to cut out of the bill if somebody decides it's not really cleanup. So that was sort of my takeaway from the meeting. They were going to kind of circle back, I think, amongst themselves and talk about what that would look like, but we were going to start kind of our technical cleanup. We have a list, and we were going to start looking at putting together a draft of that and bring that back to the commission. And then along with the cleanup, again, is the issue with the constitutional timelines. I mean, some people would call that a cleanup, and some people would call it a policy issue, you know, about the 15 days prior to election. And you know, there's several other timelines in there. There's some timelines regarding initiatives and other things that don't really work very well with 1303.
Isn't the 15 days was unique to the recall, wasn't it?
That one was unique to the recall, but there are some other timelines in there that present issues. There's a timeline for even setting. There's lots of timelines in the recall. There's the 15 days. There's the date of the the time period to set the election. There were three or four dates that conflicted with statutes in there. Most of them had some overlapping dates with the statute, so we could make it work. The 15 did not. But in terms of putting forward a bill that would refer that to the voters to, you know, take that out of the Constitution, that I think would be more of a policy bill and maybe more appropriate for a separate bill. But I think that that's something that we need to discuss, because from the Secretary's office perspective, we're going to have problems with that in our rulemaking, you know, going forward, because anytime there's a recall, it's necessarily going to conflict with 1303. And so the question is, if the legislature is not going to refer that to the voters, then I think that we need to come up with a statute that would allow for compliance with the 15 days and put out a model so that we aren't kind of building our rocket ship midair every time there's a recall election.
Interesting.
So I think that that's probably a separate issue, but it's something that we need to be thinking about in terms of getting some kind of cleanup, either in the Constitution or the statutes.
So there are, like, constitutional conflicts and other just statute requirements. There are two kind of separate categories of,
right,
of legislation. Okay. Well, I'd like to work with your person to get this cleaned up in a checklist spreadsheet format that we can all keep up with. So
yeah, and I took some notes today on the kind of subcategories, so I'll give those to him to,
okay,
to look at.
And we will work on the security issue, and I'll try to clean up the public comments arena. Okay.
Great. All right. Anyone have anything else on issue tracking? We're not meeting the next Monday, right, Steve?
That's correct. The commission will not meet on the 9th, which leaves the 16th for the next agenda. And we will have a business practices subgroup briefing on the 16th. They're going to do the run through the VSPC final model. Yes.
And then maybe as we move closer to that, after the new spreadsheet comes out, we'll see what kind of staff availability we have to update on some of those, like Eric and some of those other issues.
Should we have the software team tell us where we are on the 2013 mods to score?
I think that'd be fine. I think we can probably put that together.
Shouldn't take but a minute.
Yeah. Do you want to add that, Steve, the mock election?
How about the mock election? When are we going to do that? Oh, is that what you just said? Okay.
Yeah. Can do mock election.
And Representative Rankin, you wanted somebody from our IT department to talk about the score updates?
Yeah. Just the 2013 mods, how we're doing on getting ready for November.
Anyone have anything else for that agenda? All right. Then I think that'll do it, and we are adjourned.